May I listen and then speak, and may we listen and then do. Let's be seated. I used to teach middle school children, my favorite level, believe it or not. Yeah, I'm weird like that. I love those middle schoolers. And even beyond that, I taught them poetry and literature and creative writing. I loved teaching them, and before school would start or after school, it was kind of a walk-in school. In Vermont, most of the kids rode bikes or walked, or parents dropped them off. And my door was open, and so the kids would gather, and we'd just hang out, visit, you know, that kind of thing. It was a joy. And one of the more observant and astute kids said one morning before classes started, "Miss Rice, you always wear that necklace. What is it?" And he was right. I did always wear that necklace. It was a Christian ichthos, you know, the Greek sign for Jesus, the fish. He said, "What is it?" And I said, "Can you guess?" And he said, "You like to eat fish?" Another one said, "You like to go fishing?" "Sorry, honey, but it's not true. I do not like to go fishing." And then I remember distinctly this little girl, sixth grader, looked up at me and she said, "Miss Rice, I know what you are. You're a Pisces." No, honey, that's not what I am either. And I don't know if that sweet Vermont girl was more attuned to astrology than she was religion, but that was not it. And so I told them, I said, "I am a follower of Jesus and a beloved child of God." Well, talk about big eyes. It was like, she's what? Who is she? And then thankfully the bell rang. It was time to start class, and the kids said, "Miss Rice, we got to start." And I'm like, okay. For me, that was an important symbol of my identity. And so I wore that necklace for a long time, all the way through teaching, all the way through the first church assignment I had, all the way through John Seminary, all the way through his first church assignment. We're talking a long time now. And then one day I met a little girl, wasn't sure who she was having trouble finding her identity. So I gave her the necklace. I don't know where she is now, I can't even remember her name, but I just knew that she needed to know that she was a beloved child of God. I didn't find out until I was 17. That's almost 60 years ago. Yes, I'm that old. But it was a lifesaver. The Colossians had kind of a similar problem. They weren't sure who they were. They were getting inundated. If you read the verses that follow, you'll find out that they're talking about what to wear, what not to wear, who to eat with, who not to eat with, what to eat, what not to eat, who to hang out with, who not to hang out with. The list is endless. So no wonder they couldn't figure out who they were. And so Paul says, "Guys, it's not complicated." He says it in lots of complicated words. I'm simplifying it for you. Paul usually used a lot more words than he needed to. Sorry, Paul. He simply says to them, "You are beloved children of God. You've been taken into God's hearts. You don't need to worry about all this other stuff. So act like it. Act like it." This from a guy who had a very long list of qualifications for being children of God, right? Before he became Paul and he was Saul, his list had lists. Check the T's, dot the I's. If you weren't on that list or the list of the list of the list, you probably were not a child of God. And then one day God says, it's not the way it works, Paul. If I got to blind you in order to see, I will. And so he did. And Paul did. And Paul learned that what is essential to identity is something we discover after God has scraped away all of our assumptions. Somehow Abraham knew this, that wonderful lesson. Thank you so much. He'd just become Abraham from Abram. Remember in the Hebrew Testament, how you get a new name from God when you sort of become a new person? And Abraham, very recently Abraham, somehow knew that it was okay for him to stand there with God and in this wonderful, meant to be funny, meant to be audacious conversation with God. Abraham says, listen, God, I want to know exactly how many good people there have to be before you save all of them. And I'm not related to any of these except for one, Lot. That's it. I don't know anybody in Sodom. But let me ask you. And so it goes back and forth and back and forth. Now, how did Abraham know that that would be something he could do? If it had been a different God of that era, you wouldn't have done that. You would have been squashed like the proverbial bug. Gods in other cultures did not want arguments, did not want talk back, did not want any kind of bargaining. They wanted subservience, thank you very much, with a little worship and goodies thrown in. That was it. So how did Abraham know that it was okay to be that intimate with God? That's a radical thing, to be intimate with God. Didn't happen, but it did there. How did he know? It's in the verse. It didn't get read this morning because it's not in the lectionary. I need to talk to those people. They need to put the first two verses of this passage in the lessons. Because in those first two verses, it says, God's wondering. God says to God's self, gee whiz. He doesn't go gee whiz, but I do. He says, gee whiz, should I share my plans for Sodom with Abraham? Yes, I think I will, because I have chosen him. He is my chosen one. And so this convinces God to tell Abraham his plans. God didn't do that. They didn't let you know what was coming down the road next. They didn't care. But this God does. This God does. And so he tells Abraham, gives him a little lesson. This is what I'm going to do. And then the conversation happens. But there's a Hebrew word there, chosen. There are several different kinds of chosen. Now, if I'm getting a basketball team ready, I'm going to pick the tallest person, right? If I've got a 6'11 friend who can dunk, I'm going to say, I choose that person for my team. I might not like them. I might not even know their first name. I'm just looking them up and down and going, ooh. But this Hebrew is not that. It's not that kind of chosen. This kind of chosen is a very intimate word. It means I take you into my heart. I adopt you. I will never leave you. You are part of my family, chosen. And I don't care whether you can dunk the ball or not. You're still part of me. So God has chosen Abraham to be his child. Wow. And Abraham knew it. He knew he could stand there and talk with God because God was his father. pretty big deal. Pretty big deal. And I think that's the source of Abraham's comfort in speaking with God like that, in spite of all the cultural norms that he was going against. He felt comfortable being with his father there, having that conversation. Now to the disciples, thousands of years later. Have we gotten it right yet? No, 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 we haven't. The disciples have the same question. Who are we? Who am I? Are we like John's disciples? And he had a pretty strict prayer. Do we need a pretty strict prayer? You know, certain words, and those words are better than other words. Is there a way to get closer to God if we say something specifically? So Jesus, teach us how to be exactly what we need to be. Give us the exact words of how to do this. Jesus always, always held his disciples close to his heart and understood that they were learning. And so he gives them some words, not really specific words, but words that cover kind of the basic structure. You know, give God thanks for being fed. Give God thanks for mercy and then be mercy. Call for help when you're scared. That's essentially what the Lord's Prayer is. And then he goes on, though, because he wants his disciples to grow up. And he says, okay, guys, I got two stories for you, not one. We usually think of the whole thing about the knocking at the door and the persistence and all that sort of stuff as one story. It's two stories. The first story is about persistence. And we get it. You know, if you're persistent, things happen, good or bad, but they happen. The second story is different. And not only is it different, but the nouns are different. Remember, I used to teach English, so I check out words, okay? The nouns are different. In the first story, we're talking about friends. Well, if you're a friend with somebody and somebody comes and knocks at your door in the middle of the night, you might get up eventually and open the door. Probably you wouldn't be happy that they were there, but they would forgive you because you're friends, and on it goes. Second story. The word now becomes child. We have switched from friends to children. And what happens? Jesus says, when you remember that you are a child of God, you will be brought to an open door, a door that is never locked, ever. And I wonder sometimes if we think we're banging at the door so hard, going, I need this, oh my gosh, I'm so scared, I'm not well, I whatever, 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 all the whatevers that go on in our lives. We're banging at God's door so hard. We never hear that still small voice that says, the door's not locked. Come on in. It's your home because you're my child. The door is not locked. Come on in. This is your home because you are my child. Not just my friend. Friend's good. Friend is good. I love my friends. But child is different, isn't it? Even if a child drives you absolutely bonkers crazy around the bend, and I don't know about you, but I've had moments like that, you still love the child. You can never surgically remove them from your heart. It doesn't happen. Friends, you might leave and be really sad about it, and I would hate to leave my friends. But it's different with children. And Jesus wants the disciples to understand that. I think he wants us to understand who we are and what our identity is. I want you to think about something. Because sometimes we forget that we're children of God, beloved children of God. It's not usually the first word out of our mouth, is it? Oh, hi, I'm an Episcopalian. I'm a Christian. I'm a North Carolinian. I'm a beloved child of God. Whoa, try saying that in the grocery store line. That'll get you some looks. But that has got to be our root, our base, our first identity. Because everything else comes after that and out of that. And when I forget that, and I do, I know that my life depends upon God helping me remember that part of my identity. If I forget everything else, if I can say I am a beloved child of God, that's enough. Here's the other thing to think about. A little logic test here now for you. I don't usually use logic and love in the same sentence, but it works this time. Logically, if we are all of us and everybody out there beloved children of God, doesn't that mean we have a whole lot of siblings? Oh my goodness. Does that mean at the Thanksgiving table, I'm going to have to sit next to so-and-so whom I really have nothing in common with? I don't like them. I don't like to listen to them. I don't like them. I don't like to watch them eat food. I don't like to be with them in the same room. Does that mean I'm going to have to sit at the same Thanksgiving table with them? Yes. Does that mean I can sit at the other end, really, really, really far away from them? I hope the table's big enough. Does that mean that? No, it doesn't. It means I need to sit next to them. Because everyone in here, out there, brothers and sisters, is your brother and sister. Oh, darn. And oh, thank you, God. Because if anybody is left out in the list of beloved children of God, then it is not God's list. God doesn't keep lists anyway, but you know what I mean. What we are to do then, as beloved children of God, is one thing. Well, no, two things. I just remembered another one. Two things. First, cling to that. Remember that no matter what, we are always beloved children of God. Brad's bumper sticker, that thing, right there. That's it, right there. We are always God's beloved children, and there's nothing we can do about it. That's a good thing. And the other thing that we do as beloved children of God is if we happen to come upon somebody who has forgotten that, or somebody who drives us absolutely bonkers crazy, you know what we're called to do? We are called to scooch as close to them as we can at that Thanksgiving table. Just get right up there, wiggle next to them, pull your chair smack dab up against them, and whisper in their ear, "Don't forget, you are a beloved child of God, always and forever." Amen.